南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。Thank you so much for being here. Welcome back, those of you who are longtime subscribers, and fine, how do you do? And welcome to those of you who are new or here for the first time. First of all, I want to thank my patrons, all of you on Patreon and through PayPal, and even people occasionally send me paper checks in the mail. Guess what? People still do that. I just got a delivery of, as you'll notice behind me, my new LED light fixtures to repair the butsudan, the old fluorescent bulbs that I had in there, and the fixtures. They've been in there a long time, over 20 years. Man, been a long time. Yeah, well over 20 years. So it's time for new fixtures. They're very bright. I love it. And I just got a shipment of new temple incense. So that's really cool. I love these. If you've never seen them, these are much longer, obviously. And they come... and since, you know, this is the school and I have a larger butsudan in here, and see, they all come in bundles, and I don't know. It's really cool. I love the aloes wood and the sandalwood, but they're not cheap. And so I thank you guys for helping keep us in our supplies, in our school, as well as all this technology, right? So very, very much appreciated. And since I'm on the subject, we recently went over 1,000 subscriptions, which put us in the monetization engine in YouTube. But I'm torn about it because as a YouTube watcher, I find the commercial content, the advertisements, in the last couple of years have gotten insane. You know, it's originally the reason why we cut the cable and went to these other modes of media consumptions. There was very little, if any, commercials, but now, oh my goodness. And my fear is that although I tried to cut back certain types of commercials, maybe I need to do more cutting back. Because, you know, these are long-form videos, and if every freaking 5 minutes you've got to pile drive through a half dozen commercials, I don't want you to turn away or get sick of commercials and not participate in this activity. This channel is for study and augmenting our practice of Buddhism, not to make money. I mean, if it could make money from just existing as it is, that would be wonderful. You know, in the old days, when a monk walked around the town, everyone gave some kind of subsistence to them, whether it was food or money or whatever, because that's what you did. But we don't live in that world anymore, right? We're all fending for ourselves. So, I don't know, the more I think about it, the more I want to... Yeah, I'm glad we hit that benchmark. I want to continue to grow this channel. But at the same time, it's really important to like and subscribe, because that affects the algorithm to make this channel more accessible. It'll come up in more searches. The monetization thing isn't so much about money. It's about if YouTube thinks it can make money off of you, then they promote your channel more. It's very capitalistic. And it could help us. But at the same time, if it impedes our sharing of information and we get tired of it, that's not a good thing. And that's why I created this channel. So let me know your thoughts on this. Are there too many commercials? Because I don't watch my own videos, so I'm relying on you guys to tell me. Is the state of the commercials in the last few videos like a big turnoff? Is it, oh, okay, I'll take a break. I can go make a sandwich. I'll come right back. Maybe that's okay. Is it a matter that there's too many? Should I first try to cut back some of the types of advertising? There's different types like skippable, non-skippable, placard, interest, blah, blah, blah. And I've knocked a couple of them out. Certainly the non-skippable ones gone. I don't want to force. I don't like being part of that engine. Do you know what I mean? But at the same time, I do want to promote this teaching and get it out there to more people. Please let me know your thoughts. You're the guys who matter for me. You're the guys who provide for me to buy incense and replacement bulbs and pay the internet bill and on and on and on. I don't want to lose you. I don't want to turn you off. So enough said. Just let me know in the comments, would you please? Okay, enough business. Wow, really went off on that. And let's continue with our amazing Virmalakirti Sutra, right? Seeing Akshobhya Buddha, I think we're going to delve into what is the nature of Buddha-ness? What does it mean, Buddhahood? What kind of altered state? Now, I've talked about this a lot. You know that. If you're a longtime watcher, you know I've talked about it in the 3,000 realms, in all the videos on the origins of life in the 3,000 realms, although those are at least a decade old. So I have revisited the subject many times, the 3,000 realms and the source, the energy of the engine of life, the universe. Yeah, I've talked about it from several different points of view. It always ends up centered around the same thing. But here again, so do the sutras, all try to grapple with words this concept of liberation from our cravings, our habit energy of constantly looking to gain time, gain life, gain food, gain relationships, gain. And then on the other side of that coin, fear of losing something. That's our samsaric engine. And from that engine, we create stress and anxiety. This is the core of Buddhism. Buddhism is about, how do I have all this stuff, but not have all this stress and anxiety? And something is, got a flying hair in there or something. Apologies. But sometimes you just got to scratch the itch, don't you? So, I mean, we're talking about gain and loss. And I just got through talking about commercials, ads, YouTube algorithms, blah, 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 blah. So it's not about getting rid of those things. It's about how we experience those things. If our experience of things, relationships, all of possession, right? You could look at the universe as just a massive, party of stuff. If we equate those things with our bodies, our state of being, as all being a momentum, a constantly moving, changing flux, target of energies, just manifesting moment to moment to moment, the permanence aspect of, because if something's impermanent, how can you hang on to it? You can't. In the next moment, whoop, right? It's like the, what do you call them? The observers in that show Fringe that was on for about 5 years. They just, whoop, they're not there. You go to grab it, it's not there. It's in the next moment along with you. So the grabbing idea starts to disassemble. And all we are is pure experience of this manifestation moment to moment of potentials. And that's important because if we understand life, the universe, as a moment to moment instantiation of potentials, it means that we can influence that, that we by default are participants in that. Yeah. So if you alter your participation, you alter your result. This is the core of the practice of Buddhism. Let's see what this chapter brings. At that time, the world-honored one said to Vimalakirti, "You wanted to see the thus come one. Now, how do you regard the thus come one? What do you think that is? You're working toward your enlightenment. You're working toward Buddha-ness. What does that look like? Without thinking it's something other, because duality, what is enlightenment?" Yeah, good question. So Vimalakirti, so far the hero of this story, right? He says, quote, "As I would regard my own true form or reality, in that same way do I regard the thus come one. I regard the thus come one as not existing from past, not departing in the future, not abiding here at present." Now that's really, really important because you've heard me say about now, birth death. Moments. How long is a moment? This is critical stuff now, because this is where you can get tripped up in language. How long is a moment? I had a thought last night as I went to bed after Gongyo, thinking, what makes a proton? Think for a moment of that chart you've seen on the wall in chemistry class and science classes of the elements, right? When I was going through high school, there were 113 or 103. Anyway, there's a limited number of them, yeah? We have a lot of man-made elements now. It's, you know, can't really use those in this discussion. But even if you did, there's no more than 115 or so, maybe 120. I don't know. But it's a limited number. When you consider the size of the universe, everything is made of those few elements. Think about what that means. All of those elements are made of what? Electrons, protons, neutrons, in different quantities, in different electromagnetic states. We're not far away from realizing that the proton of an atom of gold, or a molecule of, well, an atom of gold, or an atom of hydrogen, or an atom of oxygen, or an atom of sulfur, protons, the one proton, there's several and there's different numbers, but take any one of those protons and they're identical. They're made, yes, of quarks, and there's variations in the quarks, but a proton is a proton is a proton. Every proton the equanimity, the oneness of the universe. This is 3,000-year-old thinking, and Shakyamuni knew this. Protons, electrons, neutrons, quarks, they're all descriptions, analyses, states of energy. Ultimately, everything is energy, and it is instantiating potential, moment to moment to moment to moment. Potential hydrogen, potential molecule, potential DNA, potential you and me. But it's all from the same thing, the same pot that is the universe. How long does it take for the quiescent energy to go through a formation and instantiate into the form of a proton, a particular proton in a particular tendency, in a particular condition that then combines with a particular conditions of neutron in order to then support a particular number of electrons and then instantiate helium? How long does that take? We, think Max Planck and his minimal numbers of the minimal distances, minimal times, Planck time, P-L-A-N-K, if you want to look it up, if you want your mind blown just a little bit. How many zeros after a decimal point can you come up with? Is that a moment? It's certainly definable as time, and since it's definable as time, whether it's 20 some or 30 some zeros before one, you can't conceive of that brief of a time period, but certainly because you identify it with a number and call it time, then it's a moment. So you see, when you think of that, and then you use language to say now, well, just the articulation of the word now contains hundreds of thousands of moments, right? So when he says not abiding here at present, that's what he's talking about. Because this mechanism, this process of life, this understand, this Buddha understanding of the nature of time and moments and instantiation, it doesn't stick around. It's constantly evolving, moving momentum, yes? So it's not that Buddhahood does not exist. It exists outside of our perception of time, our experience of time. Follow? I do not regard him as form, even though the word him is used. See, this is the problem of translations. This is where you can trip up. This is my whole goal in this channel and sharing with you insights, is where you can get tripped up thinking about Buddha-ness, Buddhahood. What are we doing? It's not form. Buddha is not form. Form, that's the confetti after the party. I do not regard Buddha as resembling form. In other words, it doesn't have a particular set of characteristics. That's quite a revolutionary statement in light of all the sutras that we've read where the Buddha has 80-some marks or 37 marks of... We have to remove our definition of the word mark and replace that with a suchness. Ah, that's a much better word. Trying to grab at something that is a tendency and condition is empty. But we can label that sense, that consistent tendency and condition as a single suchness. And that's what we practice in Gongyo when we chant the 10 factors of life. They are suchnesses. And if we use the words, crafted the words consistently to say those things and explain those things, I think a lot more people would understand Buddhism. But because we have all of these other linguists and translationists trying to make everything a blue jean Bible, we're left unsatisfied. It starts to get mysterious, and it shouldn't, because nothing is more clear than Buddhism. I do not regard him as perception, conception, volition, or consciousness. I do not regard him as resembling consciousness. I do not regard him as having the nature of consciousness. Now, Virmalakirti spells out the full process of negation only for the first and last of the five components, form and consciousness. But it is assumed that the same negations apply to the other three, perception, conception, and volition. Because all of those words are talking about an accrued process. So Buddhahood is the initial process itself before these categories manifest. For a category to manifest, for a form to manifest, it needs to happen over a span of time, a span of moments. But in the moment itself, there is just energy to manifest some tendencies and conditions. They piggyback on time. I know, bear with me. He does not rise out of the four great elements, right? Earth, wind, fire, water, but is the same as the empty sky. Because it's a process, it's not a thing. He is without accumulation of the six sense media, right? The consciousnesses and what they're conscious of, right? Eyesight isn't a thing until there's something to be seen, and then we perceive eyesight. He has transcended eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, so he's just repeated what I was just saying, and does not exist in the threefold world, because the threefold world is what? Past, present, future. There is only the moment, and the next moment, and the next moment, and the next moment. Not the now, which is a collection of moments, the moment. He has separated himself from the three defilements of greed, anger, and stupidity, passed through the three gates of emancipation, and acquired the three understandings, which are the equivalent of ignorance. He is not identical in form with others, not different in form, not of his own form, not of some other form, not lacking form, not acquiring form. He is not on this shore, not on the other shore, not in midstream, and yet he converts living beings. So this is the problem in words, stated in words. How do you identify something which is solely a witness? Not like a court witness, but a witness of, an observer of. In science, we talk about it all the time, right? Quantum deals a lot with observer. does it happen if no one sees it happen? It's as old as the hills, right? If a tree falls in the wood and nobody's there to see it or hear it, did it fall? Did it make a noise? So in this next statement is one of the foundational thoughts that I latched onto many, many years ago, decades ago, with regard to Buddhaness and the origins of life, the 3,000 realms, the whole ball of wax. Here it goes. You ready? He is seen to be in tranquil extinction, but does not remain in extinction for long. That's kind of a conundrum, yeah? And I have a little side note I wrote in the margin here. Quiescent energy. What is karma? It's energy with action, energy with work. The moment energy It is moved, it is influenced. It then goes through a period, very, very, very tiny, moment to moment, of influence. That influence does what? It launches what we call formation. The energy of formation that precipitates manifestation from potential energy. It's so tiny. But if you accumulate enough of it, universe, yeah? The minute it starts to happen, it sparks instantiations galore. Buddha is not this, is not that, is not, does not show him itself in this. It's not a quality of this. It does not show himself in that. It's not this or that, or the qualities of this or that. One cannot know Buddha through wisdom. One cannot be conscious of Buddha through consciousness. He is without darkness, without brightness, without name, without form, without strength, without weakness. He is not pure, not defiled, not in any direction, not removed from direction, not conditioned, not unconditioned, without purport, without explanation. He is not charitable, not stingy, does not observe the precepts, does not violate them, is not forbearing, not irate, does not press forward, does not slack, is not calm mind. Pause for realization. Is not distracted, is not wise, not stupid, not sincere, not deceitful, not arriving, not departing, does not go out, does not enter in. He is cut off from all that can be said in words. So that question, what is Buddha-ness? What is Buddhahood? It's kind of a meaningless question. It's just a clear understanding of form, formlessness, formation, energy, moment to moment. Movement is the only thing you could ascribe to it. Momentum, because time. Think about it. Time, how can time exist if there's no space? There has to be space for time to be expressed. And that's life. That's what we're witnessing. That, just focus on that thought for a while. It's hard to conceive. And yet, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. We're in it. We're in it because we're of it. That's why it's innate. We don't have to go anywhere to find it. It's already happening moment to moment to moment to moment. Wake up. He is not a field that produces merit, nor a field that does not produce merit. He's not worthy of alms. He's not unworthy of alms. He is not to be acquired, not to be put aside, does not possess form, and is not without form. He is identical with the ultimate reality, one with the Dharma nature, the Buddha nature. Yeah? Buddha, as I've said before, is a name we give to label this process, this engine of life. But that label, that name, is only necessary because we have a mind that distinguishes and identifies. See, Buddha is a provisional term we've given to an enlightenment, a light on in the attic, a perceptive experience that alters our constant grasping, our idea of self, ego, possession. That mental state removes us from that grasping and just witnesses the process. We call it Buddha, because we need a label for it, just like we need to chant to awaken it in our samsaric mind. Without a samsaric mind, what good is chanting? Just a bunch of words. Understanding the meaning, the goal of this study, that gives meaning, that gives action, that gives meaning to time. Causality, influence, right? He cannot be labeled, cannot be measured, for he is beyond all labeling and measuring. Then why call him he, Burton? Buddha is removed from all ties and bonds. Buddha is not big, is not little. Not to be seen, not to be heard, not to be awakened to, not to be known. Buddha is removed from all ties and bonds, equal to all wisdoms, identical with living beings, free of distinctions with regard to things, because Buddha is not a thing. And you notice I've replaced the word he with Buddha, Burton. Buddha is utterly without loss, without contamination, without anxiety, without action. That's a big one, without action. Remember what karma is? Energy plus action. Buddha is not taking action, is that without action. It's identifying that aspect of the process of life that is pre-formative. You could identify it in the time space, go back to Planck, the time space of formation, this active moment interaction with energy. In that, one can locate in our minds Buddha-ness. Because it's pre-formed, so there's no attachment. There's no gain or loss. There's just a momentum of energy with tendencies and conditions. Which tendencies and conditions, Sifu? All of them. Can you put a number to them? Or are they constantly... Right? From that point of view, you could understand in a different way the expansion of the universe, potential constantly manifesting itself in various ways, albeit with a periodic table, limited set of Legos, protons, neutrons, electrons, so on and so forth. identical with living beings, the process, moment to moment of living, free of distinctions with regard to things. Buddha is utterly without loss, without contamination, without anxiety, without action, without rousing, without birth, without extinction, right? It transcends moment to moment. It's pre-moment to moment, because what is moment to moment? Time. It's moment to moment is only a word device to describe the physical universe. Without fear, without sorrow, without joy, without weariness, without attachment, without a past existence, without a future existence, without a present existence. Which right away, those last few totally wipe out the idea of Amitabha Buddha in a future Buddha land. That's not Buddha. That's earthly grasping. That's ego wanting to hold on to time. Right? What do we read, recite in Gongyo? Since time without beginning, no time. The aspect of time, space, is thingifying. No words or explanation whatsoever can distinguish and depict Buddha. We can just get into the stream. We can identify, we can invoke Buddha-ness in our samsaric experience of time. Experience it. World-honored one, the body of the Thus Come One is like this, and this is the way I regard him. To regard in this manner is called correct regarding. To regard in any other is called erroneous regarding. At that time, our buddy Shariputra, he asked Vimalakirti, where did you die before you were reborn here? Oh man, Shariputra. I feel bad for him. He's kind of Shakyamuni's tool of a little bit the fool. He's a Sravaka. He's very accomplished, but he's still stuck in the world of things. Past, present, future. It's like he didn't hear a word Vimalakirti just said. So how's Vimalakirti going to answer him? So Vimalakirti says, in the law that you learned, is there any such thing as dying or being born? Slap. Wait, what did you just ask? You're supposed to be a great Shravaka. Where the hell do you come up with this past, present, future existences like they're meaningful? Everything's moment, 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 moment. What are you not getting? Shariputra replies, no, there is no dying or being born. If all things are without the nature of dying or being born, then why do you ask where I died before, where I was reborn here? What's your opinion? Do phantom men and women conjured up by a magician know anything of dying or being born? No, there is no dying or being born for them. And have you not heard the Buddha say that all things are in the nature of conjured beings? Constructions of the mind? Yes, replied Shariputra. What else could he say? If all things are in the nature of conjured beings, then why do you ask where I died before I was reborn here? Shariputra, dying is in its nature simply the destruction of something that is empty and fraudulent. And being born is in its nature the continuation of something that is empty and fraudulent. But the Bodhisattva, though he dies, does not wipe out his good roots. And though he is born, he does not prolong those things that are evil, negative. Here we're struggling with the definition of words again. There's born, when you first hear that word, in utero, fetus development, birth through the birth canal, being. And then there's born, as in moment. Which really should be instantiation. But in the words of the translations of Buddhism, the word born is used, cycle of birth and death. But it should be clear that when we're talking about the cycle of birth and death, we are talking about instantiations, sparks of existence, yeah? At that time, the Buddha said to Shariputra, let me step in here. There is a country called Wonderful Joy with a Buddha named Immovable, Akshobhya. Vimalakirti here died in that country and was reborn in this one. So here we go with the storytelling examples. To try to make this palpable for poor Shariputra, who can't quite wrap his mind around it. So we're going to have an expedient means from Shakyamuni here. Shariputra says, I've never heard of such a thing, world-honored one, that this man could bring himself to abandon a land of purity and willingly come to this place with all its wrath and injury. Why would he leave a beautiful Buddha land to come into this miserable hell of its senses suffering, samsara, where everything is ruled by grasping and hanging on to? Yeah? Vimalakirti said to Shariputra, he jumps in now as the voice of Shakyamuni, but this is the story. What is your opinion? When the light of the sun shines forth, does it mix with the darkness? No, replied Shariputra. When the light of the sun shines forth, all darkness at once ceases to exist. Well, that's not quite right, but let's go with this, yeah? Vimalakirti said, and the sun, why does it visit this continent of Jambudvipa? Because it wishes to use its brightness to drive the darkness away, said Shariputra. Oh, again, you see his adherence to thingness? Because the sun wants to drive darkness away. Let's see what happens here. Vimalakirti said, the Bodhisattva is like this. Though he is born in an impure Buddha land, he does this so he can convert living beings. He does not mix with or share its stupidity and darkness. He merely wipes out the darkness of earthly desires that besets living beings. So the analogy is, the sun doesn't discriminate what it lights, what it warms up. But by the nature of what the sun is, plants grow, people warm up, so on and so forth. The Bodhisattva is like this. By simply being one who courses as a Bodhisattva, instantiating the Buddha mind along the way. See, this is why we need Bodhisattvas. This is why Shakyamuni is kind of mislabeled as Buddha, because we tend to put the label Buddha on this exquisite awareness. But the exquisite awareness isn't Shakyamuni. Shakyamuni, the man, the teacher, is a bodhisattva, albeit fully within the mind state of Buddha. So you could understand, labeling-wise, as humans as we are, we would identify Shakyamuni, Siddhartha Gautama, now enlightened, named Shakyamuni, Buddha. But in truth, Buddha doesn't walk the planet. Buddha doesn't have form. Buddha is an awakening, a condition of mind, and that in itself is a thing. And so Buddha is not that. It is just what the mind is able to grasp. And when we talk about the consciousness, which is the Buddha consciousness, we're talking about consciousness as an ability to become aware of Buddha in its entirety without time. I know this gets word salad, yeah? But listen carefully. He's describing a bodhisattva because, like the sun, a thing, a tendency and condition of the universe, how many suns are there? There is not only one. We label it like it's a unique thing, but it's just a star. And it provides, with its tendencies and conditions, an environment for us to flourish. But it's not doing it on purpose. That's just its nature. And so as human beings, if we adopt a nature of awakening, we become, in the same way, an influence to our environment for others to flourish. That's the whole formula. At that time, the members of the Great Assembly were filled with longing, desiring to see the wonderful joy world and the thus come one immovable and his host of bodhisattvas and voice hearers. The Buddha knew what all the members of the assembly were thinking, and he said to Vimalakirti, "Good man, you must make the land of wonderful joy and the thus come one immovable and his host of bodhisattvas and voice hearers visible to the members of this assembly. They all long to see him." What is the Lotus Sutra's interpretation of this act? Chant together, bring others to this akshobhya reality, the wonder of the process of life, that all perceiving knowledge, Buddha wisdom. Wisdom by itself does not attain Buddhahood, but the enlightened experience, which we would call wisdom, because it's a possession of the samsaric mind, alters our perception of everything, therefore our experience of everything. All of this continuously tracks. Then Vimalakirti thought to himself, "Now without rising from my seat, I shall take this country of wonderful joy with its iron encircling mountains and rivers." Oh, we just now hear that. He's conjuring this state of being. "Its valleys, waterways, great seas, fountains, its Sumeru and the other mountains." Oh, that's interesting. It has a Sumeru mountain in it. So he's altering the perception of the very world that's around them. Enlightenment, awakening. "Along with its sun, moon, stars, and palaces of the heavenly beings, dragon spirit," the whole mental caboodle. "Host of bodhisattvas, voice hearers, its cities, villages." He's populating this very world in this conjuring of this perfect world of akshobhya, Buddha. Do you see? It's not another place. Thus come one immovable, and the Bodhi trees and wonderful lotus blossoms are all able to carry out the Buddha's work in the 10 directions, the jeweled staircase, on and on and on and on, the Threshima heaven, the jeweled stairways. Thus come one, listen to and receive his teachings, and the inhabitants of Jambudvipa may also ascend these stairways to the Trayashtrimsara heaven and visit its heavenly beings, for the world more wonderful joy is replete with immeasurable benefits or merits such as these, extending upward to the on and on and on and on and on. And show it to all these beings. What did I write here on the side? All these worlds are alternate states of mind. Yeah. They're just different states of understanding of the very world we're in. They're not other. They're perceptive shifts. Having had this thought, he entered samadhi. There it is. Active meditation. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Manifesting his transcendental powers, lifted the wonderful joy world out of its place with his right hand and set it down on the ground in this world. All this poetics, all this storytelling, all of this expedient means simply to alter minds. Oh, I've gone on too long. All right. Now that we've done that, we've gotten everyone to chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, and we're all in an instant experiencing Buddhahood. I will continue in the next video. I know there might be, hopefully this is clear, but there may be a lot of questions. Please don't hesitate to ask them, because I assure you, if you have the will to answer, ask a question, no matter how, you know, poorly formed it might be or how perfect it might be, there are lots of other people who wish they would have asked the question. So please try, and I will do my best to, it's hard for me to be less verbose, but words being what they are, we sometimes have to circumambulate many times in order to get to a central point. That's just how it is. Our samsaric minds, our monkey minds, super active on seizing things. It's hard to break that connection, yeah? But I'll do my best. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you. Don't forget, like, subscribe, right? Use the other websites, the free information on threefoldlotus.com, so on and so forth. I will see you in the next one. Take care of your health. Be kind to yourself. And I'll see you then. Bye for now.